same time as those spaces of power might be going away or getting more difficult, we're having some new ones emerge, and there's this mass of think tanks and agencies generating new ideas. And a lot of these, I put Demos up there because it has done at least one initiative that is still high in the policy imaginary. I put these up there because they all draw on some of the stuff I've been talking about. Things that originally generated in alternative, interstitial, liminal, social movement-y, activist-y, community spaces, and kind of rework them, repackage them, with some, a little soupçon from the States, a soupçon from Scandinavia maybe, and rework them. And we can just flick fairly quickly through. This is a Demos one that is still quite significant and is very kind of communitarian issue. ABCD is the asset-based community development on. This is, I think that's the New Economics Foundation, which has done some very good stuff on the Big Society, which is excellent, but it also combines it with some other things. And WARM is the Young Foundation talking about instituting a well-being and resilience measure against we can measure effectiveness of particular things. There's a very strong focus on capabilities and resilience. And there's a whole set of new entrepreneurial activities offering resilience training and, next one, character. This is the end report or packaged report of a research project on how to do character education in schools. And it so happened that at the end of that programme of research, it's packaged as the Big Society and the Rediscovery of Virtue. So it's sort of been about things being picked up and reworked. This is a particularly interesting one because London Citizens is activist in that it holds policymakers to account, has a very effective lobbying stance. But you can only be a member. You can only go and present your ideas or be part of their campaigning if you are a member of a church congregation. And this brings me to something significant, which is the rise of faith and religion as markers of the ideal image of a big society. This was, of course, already there under New Labour because it was part of the both Blair's own religious position, but also his opening up of markets to new players. Faith organisations were big players. But it's also something significant about why the big society is possible as a political imaginary. And here I want to just draw on Bill Jordan's work on why the third way failed, which he's published recently. And he argues that we should take the big society seriously because the failures of New Labour actually opened up the space for it. And the failures of New Labour were about its rationalistic, technocratic, transactional models of policy. That is, its use of targets, indicators, measures, all of that stuff, with which it tried to say to the public, our contract with you is, we will make services better through these mechanisms. You've got benchmarks. You can see they've improved. But the public weren't sort of satisfied. And Bill Jordan argues that that's because that transactional, measurement-y kind of approach missed important things about the moral, relational, and ethical dimensions, not only of public services, but of life. You know, it made us all into consumers, but we're not. And the big society speaks to the bits of us that aren't about being consumers. I don't think Jordan talks about consumerism as such. Now, if we move into faith-based, which of course does moral and ethical and relational, if we move to faith-based and moral understandings and imaginaries of social relationships, what does that do to gender? It does bad things. It really does bad things, because questions of sexuality, abortion, all of those issues, many of those issues that women campaign for that are not about just getting welfare benefits, are suddenly not possible anymore. So it's not just turning back the feminist inscription in social policy on benefits and services, it's rewriting the script. It potentially rewrites those other scripts that are very significant. So, just go back one. Those emerging agendas, I will stop a minute, those think tank projects, what do they have in common? They're not all the same, of course, they differ. But these are some of the things that I think we can see reading across them. They're not left or right. They're looking for solutions that don't rely on the state. They pick up on the moral and relational basis of policy and the silent signals and erasures of not just those of gender, but of distributional justice, of race, of all of those equality agendas that were sort of conditionally and imperfectly inscribed in public policy. So, on and on. I think we'll skip that one because I've said it. So, is this what we're left with? And this isn't me, was taken off a picture of a student placard in the first protest against the education cuts, student grant cuts. I quite like it. So do we just go back to that? Politically, yes, we might. But I want to suggest that the research on which I've been speaking raises more difficult questions about how can we respond to some of those absences in the New Labour agenda about relationships, about care, about an ethical sense of what a good life might be, without going down the route of faith-based organisation. And I apologise to people of faith in the room, but having faith is a personal matter, and it's intersection with public policy that troubles me. So that's one reason why I think we can't just say bollocks. In terms of gender, I think that what the research shows, I mean, if we think of what's going on, the big society has two dimensions. It's a small state and it's a big society. The small state chucks women out of the welfare labour market, and that has implications for women's lives. The big society intensifies women's labour in care work and community. But what the research on which I've done problematises is it says the state, we may be getting a smaller state, but the state wasn't unambiguously a good thing for women. You know, the gender question is not just a question of state versus market. It's how each are inflected with struggles for social justice or emancipation. You know, and the state isn't necessarily the answer, but neither is the market. In terms of the big society and gendered labour, yes, it is an intensification of care work and the work of coordinative labour. And I just want to, can I just explain that point on, because I didn't do it earlier. I have a job, I don't actually do any actual care work of my 80-something-year-old aunt. But as public services get more fractured, more marketised, and as the new white paper, green paper on commissioning comes out, it will be more so. I have to do more and more coordinative labour. You know, it's an hour on the phone every other day, trying to find people to fill the gaps, trying to say, well, you said this, but they said that. So as public services become more fractured, so there is need for more coordinative labour, and that's often gendered labour. But the thing, the gendered labour that I want to focus on, that I have talked about, is the labour of generating new solutions, new kinds of prefigurative pathways. It's not only gendered, but the women in my study were exemplary examples of it, and they did the work of not only coordination, but assembling multiple resources from here and there and everywhere. They did translation. You know, how do you translate the views of this group of women that we've assembled to policymakers, and how do you translate policy back? The work of sometimes entrepreneurship, sometimes pedagogy, lots of empowerment and development programs. So they were doing lots of things that later got taken up. Where is that going to happen? Who's going to do it? And I mean, we need new imaginaries. You know, if the big society is going to mean anything, it needs new things in it, where those going to come from. And how can we make sure that as they get taken up into policy, the label doesn't come off? There's lots of more slides, but I'm going to stop up. Let's just leave that one up.
Yeah.
And see where we go from here.
Thank you, Janet. I mean, all. And as always, the connections are immense. So my head's going
too much.
No, not at all. Fantastic. I think we should just open the floor straight away, if that's okay. If people have questions, maybe if you could just say your name and the institution that you come from, that might help us just to mingle a little later. So to the floor.
I probably silenced you all.
Okay.
I'm Chloe here from Cardiff. Thank you, Janet. I was there too.
Yeah. I'll just say we're everywhere.
I had that book, Our Bodies Ourselves.
Right.
And, it was really good, and I come from the sort of NGO sector. Just, I mean, I suppose I'm looking for a little bit of optimism.
All right. Those are the slides I haven't shown right. Yet. Yeah.
Right. And, I mean, I certainly, I really recognise what you've talked about, but I certainly felt, I think, enthused and excited by recent activism in terms of students, I guess.
Yeah.
Not sort of
general. Yeah, no.
But I just wanted to ask really whether that, you feel that could be, and perhaps if the trade unions get engaged, as
yeah.
Well, that could be the beginning of the fight back.
Yeah. Should we collect a few?
Yeah, should we collect a few questions and then back to Janet? So it's time to think about it.
Character education.
Yes, I'm just using it as an example
yeah.
Of the reworking
yeah.
Notion that you talked about, big society work,
yeah.
Some of the new labour. Should we take one more question?
Hi, Catherine Rose Stocks-Raken from the University of Edinburgh. Thank you very much for that. I guess I'm wondering, when you are looking forward into these new organizations, how strong you think these networks are. Because particularly if we look at something like the Fawcett Society and its kind of recent engagement with the politics around the impact assessment of the budget. I'm wondering if there's scope for these organizations to provide kind of mentorship for new organizations, or where the old and the new intersect.
Okay. I don't speak to each other at all, so I'll just do them in order. And he's excited about students. Yes, I was too. And it made me think, I mean, the first quote I put up was about the difference between the 70s and Thatcherism. And, I mean, maybe, I mean, Thatcherism was a period where the state closed its doors and policy networks were sort of squeezed out. And it was a period of much more confrontational politics. And part of me thinks that's going to happen again, which makes all my stuff about prefigurative pathways useless, really. And in fact, doing this research, when the coalition government got elected and all this stuff started happening, I thought, well, there's no point carrying on because, you know, it's just ridiculous. There isn't going to be the space for this. So this is my first going back to it and seeing if I can rework it. But I hope that more will happen. I mean, all of the people who've been active over the last 40 years and who are still active aren't dying. You know. They're still here, somewhere. And if my interest is in what makes links between activist commitments, and it may now be green politics rather than feminist politics, you know, the agendas change. It's now global environmental movements, not national welfare states, that are the key object of concern. And of course, green politics is very strongly reflected through feminism anyway. Those people who have commitments to something, what will they do? Will they all get asleep for 5 years? They'll join protests and adversarial politics, but they might be doing something else as well. I don't know. But they're not the people being summoned by volunteering. They're not. And interestingly, the moral and relational agendas I was talking about come over strongly in some of the coalition political ideology. I've just lost my train of thought as that started. No, it's gone. Sorry. So I'm more enthused and excited about the potential of global networks now rather than national welfare state influence. And I'm, this takes me to the one of the other questions, which is the Fawcett Society and Women's Budget Group are doing a fabulous job in bringing it to the attention, but I think it's on an agenda that women's poverty is clearly very significant. I need to be very careful here. But taking action just on the theatre of the state is for me no longer enough, because that the prefigurative work, the policy networky things that influence those policies are no longer there. You know, those networks between sympathetic women ministers in government, senior civil servants who've come through the women's movement, and feminist academics and feminist campaigners, we're all retiring. However, there are very strong I did find some very strong intergenerational links. Two examples. One was the Silver Black Sisters, which opens doors for young black women who were of political dimension. Another was a woman who was working in the field of community arts, and she was her political formation was in the late 80s, early 90s. And I said, oh, well, you know, so that's different from this old... No, no, she said, I'm a woman of the 60s, even though I wasn't born until 1976 or whatever it is. So and another woman who was doing... worked in a... She came out of environmental movements into something called a gender audit project in Manchester. And so a gender audit project, you know, she was funded by... some state body, the North West Regional Development Agency or something, North East. There's an offshoot of Manchester University that got the funding, employed her to do gender audit projects for various bodies that wanted them. And if you got a bad audit, you were then, you know, drawn to employing the gender audit group to help you work out an organisational strategy. And she said, so what we do with them is consciousness raising, which is a very 70s concept. You know? So that there are some intergenerational resonances that are significant, but they're not powerful networks in the way that they used to be. Which leads me to character education. Don't know. You could look at the work of Jessica Piker at Aberystwyth. One of the things she did that's published in a book I was involved in editing, she was one of the early career group at the university, out of whose activities we published a book with their papers in it. And she looked at schooling, and she looked at the relationship between citizenship education, which was about good things, about solidarities and civicness and reciprocity and that sort of stuff, and personalisation policies in schools, which was about individualising and targeting. And she found a sort of significant tension between those. So I think education isn't going to be one thing or another. I mean, all the sectors, health, social care, education, whatever, draw on multiple rationalities, and they all therefore have ambiguous spaces that can be used by people in different ways. So I don't know. But I do think the change of discourse, the change of ideology is significant. And that's the grounds on which things have been reinfected and reworked in particular directions.
Any other question?
I was just the bit about retiring, because I think in Wales we've had an interesting, because a lot of the prefigurative pathway women in Wales have gone on to become ministers in our government.
Yes.
And you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest, a lot of research down Cardiff, that has really altered the discourse in terms of childcare is talked about, women's issues are talked about.
Yeah.
But again, they are now moving on.
Yeah.
And we've got a new administration, we'll have another election in a few months, we'll have another one. Those women are sort of past, you know, and I just worry that, I don't see the other ones coming forward. No. Really. You know, and because those women have had that experience as activists, working in the voluntary sector, and that understanding, it has made a real difference. And I'm doing a paper later which is about children in that context, and you can see how they've been privileged. But what will happen? It's common, really. I just think Wales is an interesting example.
I think the current period will revive some politics of a political sort, but I think gender is now not really on the agenda. And I think the links between austerity politics and the new discourse of fairness, on the one hand, and the responses to gender agendas and their undermining is pernicious. There's a really strong alignment between austerity politics, fairness, and the erasure of gender. And I was looking on the Guardian website for evidence on the Fawcett Society thing, and accidentally printed out all the blogs that happened as a response, and they're awful. Mm. They're awful. They say, but women have had it so good for so long, you know. What about the rest of it? It's really unfair that women got this special treatment as workers in the welfare state and as welfare citizens. I mean, they've had it too good, and it's our turn now. And there were worse ones than that. So there's something bad going on, and I don't know what will happen. And that's why I don't know how to finish the paper. But I just wanted to get, if we're finishing, I just wanted to go back to the things I said at the beginning. It's like doing a PhD, because I've done enough interviews for a PhD, you know, and I've got all this stuff, and I don't know how to finish it. So if anybody's got an idea. because what I've done is taken a simple story, the erasure of gender, and say, well, yes, but we don't know whether that was, you know, we don't know about whether the state was good or bad, there's neoliberalism, there's all this. Where, what happens? And how do you get both a political assertion of, yes, we still need a gender politics. And there is a gender politics, there's a new brand, you know, there's feminists keep coming up. But they're about rape, sexual harassment, agenda, not about welfare, not about childcare, not about social care. It's a different kind of thing. And maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not. So the complicated story that I'm telling is one thing, and a simple politics is another thing. It's how to hold them together. And I hope it will be a publishable paper if I can hook it right. Do you think it is?
Okay, well, thank you very much, Danish. And, all I can say is we invite you back when you've finished to tell us to tell us the dot, dot, dot.
Yes.
Coffee's served at the back of the room, and then we're going to split into the two streams with the time and work in a big society stream moving downstairs into room 065.
Five.
So help yourselves. Thank you.
That's fantastic. I've got less questions.